I took some of the flowers from my sister's funeral because I thought her replacement might like them as a welcome to the family present. An hour's drive later, most of the velvety petals had little tears and creases in them because I couldn't seem to get my fingers to hold still. Mother had already fussed at me for dragging my nails through the leather seats. "You leave scratches." And for drawing pictures on the foggy windows. "Those were just cleaned." And when I absently sent yet another piece of petal fluttering to the floorboard, her hand snapped out and wrapped around my wrist like a whip. "Honestly, Caitlin, I wish you would stop fidgeting. There will be nothing left of those flowers by the time we reach Huxley." I sank farther down into the seat. The seatbelt cut into my neck, but I ignored the burning and focused instead on the wobbly, watery world outside my window. Any second, the towering gray buildings of the Huxley Laboratory compound would be coming into view. Father was already there. He probably already had the paperwork filled out. New Violet was probably already waiting by his side.
"Not New Violet," my mother's voice scolded my thoughts. "Our Violet. The same. The one and only Violet."
She was right, of course. The girl we were picking up couldn't have been any more identical to the big sister I'd always known. She was her perfect genetic copy. And thanks to Huxley's advancements in mind-linking and uploading technologies, this Violet had all of the old one's memories, too. She would fit right in. It would be like my sister never left. I was still nervous. We reached the lab and our driver pulled around to the front entrance, parked, and went to Mother's door with an umbrella. Before he could come around to mine, I was already unbuckled and halfway outside. I landed bright yellow boots first in a huge puddle, splashing bits of dirty water up my legs and onto the ruffled hem of my dress. Mother glanced at me and plastered on a smile. Her grip on her leather handbag tightened, but I knew she wouldn't scold me just then. Not in front of the paparazzi. And they were everywhere that day, in spite of the rain. For security reasons, they couldn't follow us inside the gates, but they were still clinging to the metal bars, watching us, zooming in on our lives with their shiny black cameras. "Animals," my mother said under her breath, her perfect smile twitching just slightly. I hoped and prayed no one caught it on camera, because I could imagine the headline that would go with her almost grimace. "Wife of Mayor Benson regrets controversial cloning of daughter." And then yet another article underneath detailing the evils of cloning and of the entire Huxley Corporation. More scathing words to accuse my father of crooked morals, our family of setting a poor precedent and dragging the entire city of Haven down with us. I used to think, to hope, people would get tired of reading about us, gawking at us. That there were enough problems in our world that surely everyone would eventually find something else to distract themselves with, some other family to point their fingers at. A naive hope, maybe, but I held on to it all the same. We had supporters, too, obviously. My father wouldn't have been elected to his third consecutive term without them, but they weren't usually as vocal as the protesters were, especially not on days like this. I guess because it was easier to shout hate than understanding, since you don't have to think about hate as hard. If I'd been on the outside looking in, then maybe I wouldn't have known what to say to us either. Maybe something like, "I'm sorry your daughter is dead, but congratulations on the new addition to the family." I didn't think they made cards for this sort of thing. So that day it was just us and a handful of bodyguards, alone with all of those people outside the gates shouting, calling us monsters and heathens and other names that would have gotten me grounded if I dared to repeat them. My mother walked on as if they weren't even there, because she treated everyone the same, whether they loved us or hated us.
"You don't want to give anyone the illusion," she always told me, "that anything they do can affect you. You can't give them that control, because there's no telling what they'd do with it."
So she always walked with her head held high, made sure her smile was brighter than all the camera flashes put together. Because after all, people were easy enough to fool if you knew how to do it. I didn't yet. Not as well as she did, at least. I tried, but I'd never been able to carry myself the way Mother did. She was a stone-faced, walking statue that words and rain and mud hit and just slid off of.